Oh, still a lot to talk about. Free trade on the television. That's something we could perhaps address with our guests coming up a little later on in the show. Moshe Lander is an economics professor. Spent a bit of time in Halifax over the summer at Dalhousie University. He's also in Concordia. This had to do with the CFL stadium in Winnipeg. He knows that we've been talking here, Moshe, that is, about a CFL stadium for HRM. And, well, Manitoba says, yeah, we admit it. We got conned. This thing will never pay for itself. A bit of a warning from Moshe coming up a little later on in the broadcast. Jim Roper from the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia will be with us. Challenges for fire services in the face of legalized cannabis. That's still to come. This next conversation came about. The chief of police was here with us, and we were chatting about redemption and talking about those people in our lives that we hear about in the news as well. You know, someone like a Penny Boudreaux convicted the murder of her daughter. People say, let her rot in jail. She doesn't deserve to have escorted leaves to church. We've got the story of Christopher Garnier, who's receiving PTSD treatment in part because his father, as a veteran, is entitled to have PTSD coverage. So when it comes to what it is that society expects from the people within it and how, well, how redemption tends to work. We've got with us this afternoon a name that perhaps is new to you. Perhaps you've heard of his story in the past. But Pastor Jerry Leet is here. He's the author of a book called Shattered by Pride. Trouble never leaves you the way it found you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
So with this in mind, this spirit of redemption, your story starts where, sir? As we know, you've worked in law enforcement. You worked in corrections. You were incarcerated. You spent time in jail. And
yes,
you're now working towards helping other people transform their lives.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about when you became a police officer. How did that all happen?
It happened in the RCMP, and I've got a free some credentials, mm-hmm, in the RCMP, and so they did my application, and we had 17 positive responses from my application, and so that was really good, and I went off to the RCMP and spent 6 months out there.
So you went to Regina to depot.
Yes.
You became a police officer. When was this? What year was that?
That was probably in the 1980s.
Okay, so you were a fairly young man at the time. And
yes, I was.
Was this the first career you had, was to enter as the RCMP and to become a constable?
Yeah, yes, that's correct, yes.
What was it about law enforcement that drew you? Why was that appealing to you, Jerry?
Well, it was always my goal, when I was going in high school, because I was a monitor at a high school here. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of fit for us.
You grew up in Halifax?
Yes, I did.
So as a young person, as you say, you're looking towards the RCMP. Were you in trouble with the law at all when you were a kid?
Yes. Yes, I ended up, at that time, I robbed three banks. And so I got in incredible debt, it was a tailspin after that, right? And that was about 25 to 30 years ago.
So you became an RCMP officer before this?
Yeah, that's correct.
So
yes.
Were you a police officer when you were robbing banks?
Yes, and I was also a detective here.
How does that happen? How does that,
yes,
you say, you talk about debt. Was it, was it something, was it addictions? Was it, how did you end up in a position where as a law enforcement officer,
yes,
you are that desperate, you were that compelled to,
yes,
it, did you think you were going to get away with it?
Well, I had thought, but, a number of policemen came and saw me after the fact. And so it was a very challenging time, and so it was a hard pill to swallow.
We've got as our guest in the studio this afternoon, a man involved with City Center Ministry and transforming lives and communities. So we've got Pastor Jerry Leet, from police detective to probation officer to prisoner. So you worked in corrections?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So where does that fit on the timeline between law enforcement, bank robbery, and
yes, well, it was all inclusive. I went to corrections probably in the 80s, and so I became a probation officer.
Jerry Leet is here with us. So Jerry, what was it at the time? You know, were you involved with a relationship? Did you have, you know, who were the people in your life around the time that this was happening? And were they wondering what was going on with you at the time?
Yes. Sheldon, I have to tell you that I had four beautiful kids, and I had a young family and a beautiful wife, and we had our home in Halifax area, and it ended up falling all apart, you know, through my own situation.
What was that like for you?
It was horrible, and I, when I talked to my kids, because they were young at the time, and it was a very, very hard thing to involve them in.
So how did the police end up catching you? How did you end up paying for those crimes?
I served probably about 2 years, something like that, and they released me to a halfway house in Ottawa, mm-hmm. and it was a very troubling time, and it was. Very, very hard to explain, right? Mm. You know. Anyways, I used to write letters to my children and try to help them out a bit, you know, in that aspect. But anyways, it was a real rough go. And that was 25 or 30 years ago.
Yes. And do you still have relationships with your family?
Yes, with my children, yes. Mm. My ex-wife is now down in the States. Mm. Yeah.
Jerry Leet, as mentioned, Pastor Jerry Leet is a guest in our studio, and it had to be a tough path for you, a difficult path, especially being incarcerated with people knowing you were a police officer.
Yes, that's right. And I was at in a institution in Frontenac, it's called, institution, and so it was a very difficult time, and so it was a very hard place to be, mm-hmm. And because some of the guards that were in the institution, they said, did they find out about you? You know, if you're, a police officer, right? Mm-hmm. And some of the inmates were excellent because some of them came up to me and they said, his name is Fudja. He was a Sikh terrorist, and so he said that it was. I know who you are, Jerry. Mm-hmm. I know who you are. And then Tufi is he was a Lebanese bomber, and so anyways, I was found out, right? And and then a couple of them, you know, they came around, and they grabbed the newspapers from my situation. And so they grabbed the newspapers and try to protect me.
Hmm.
Yes.
Jerry Leet here with us. Pastor Jerry Leet, from police detective to probation officer to prisoner to pastor, his story of redemption. When we started to hear this conversation about Christopher Garnier, and I'm sure you know about that case.
Yes, I know that case.
But when you hear people say he doesn't deserve any consideration for what he did to this young woman.
Yes.
What's your initial reaction to how people feel towards what was obviously a horrific crime and a terrible loss of life?
Yes. And you know, I met some of the Truro police officers, and you know, she was in a green garbage bin, right? And they took her down to there. And so I met with some of the Truro police officers at City Hall. And so it was a terrible situation, very terrible.
if though we as a society don't expect anyone to ever be redeemed, if there is no redemption, then then what's the purpose of prison?
What's the purpose of prison? Well, it you know, the law, you know, gives certain restrictions, and so it's a
what did prison do for you or to you?
It was a real tough time, and you know, I always thought about my children, right? And so, anyways, it was a real rough time. Mm. Yeah.
Now, Jerry is here with us, and Pastor Jerry Leet, and I want to talk a little bit more about the other work that you do. Producer Matt, we need to take a break, and we get back, we're going to continue our conversation about outreach and some of the other work that Jerry's been doing with his mission, Transforming Lives and Communities. We'll be right back after this. All right, welcome back to the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7. JerryLeet.com. Welcome to JerryLeet.com, from police detective to probation officer. Trouble never leaves you the way it found you. What does that mean, Jerry? If we get you to move back in a little closer to the microphone.
Yes, yeah. Trouble never leaves you the way it found you, because I had a situation where I had a lot of pride in my life, and so it you know, it enveloped me, and it was a terrible situation.
When you were caught and then convicted, and you did the time, and so often now we hear, well, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime.
Yes.
What was it about? And your book talks about, you know, your heart. Are we talking your physical heart or your emotional heart when it said you had some problems?
I didn't have any problems, but my emotions were up and down, and you know, as the police came and saw me, and you know, it was you know, I was arrested that night, you know, a number of years ago, and so it was a very tough time.
Shattered by pride. Why were you proud? Was it proud of what you thought you got away with?
No, it wasn't that way at all. It was, you know, there's something in me that has, you know, some type of pride in me, and I think that that you know, we all often fall with pride, right? Mm. And so that has been an issue with me over the years.
Jerry Leet, as mentioned, is our guest. Shattered by Pride is a book that he wrote. It never leaves you the way it found you. How do you, if people say, what's your story, Jerry? What do you tell them? I know we've kind of talked in general terms, but how do you introduce people you meet today to your story?
Yes. Well, I speak at a lot of churches, and so that's been, you know, a positive experience. Mm-hmm. And so with my Christian values and things like that, so it's been it's been, you know, a release for me. And you know, as you said, our chief of police is supportive of us. Our mayor is supportive of us, and our counselors, and I'm going tomorrow to city council. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be at 10 o'clock in the morning.
You're just reading, promoting and offering spiritual and prayer support to our city council, including the mayor and counselors. That you attend all city council sessions?
Yeah, yes, I do. Yes, I do, Sheldon.
And you also, when the House is sitting, the House of Assembly, you also attend?
Yeah, I attend all the fall, all the spring and fall settings. And, you know, we have a number of MLAs that have come to my office and sought, you know, some advice.
You know, police services around the world have, in some cases, a parish priest or perhaps someone who is of a secular way. So as a what does it mean to be a pastor? What does that mean? How do you become a pastor?
Well, I did some training through the church, and so it's been you know, a wonderful experience.
What is the City Center Ministry?
We're located in across from the Metro Center on Duke Street, and we do programs with Halifax Street Pastors, and we go out and serve the homeless, and we also bring, you know, it's been a real hot summer, right?
Yeah,
and absolutely. So we bring drinks and bars and some clothing and some food for the needs of the community.
You said it was your faith that, you know, helped support you in your life. And I'm wondering, when you have a street mission or you engage with people who may be in a really bad place with their life.
Yes.
That there are, I'm guessing, are people who say, I'm not religious. So what is your answer to?
When we go out for street pastors, we don't mention that, you know, for to convert people or anything like that. So you know, we go up to Gaudican Street and by the Salvation Army, and you know, we're not indiscriminate at all. You know, we just open up our hearts, right? And a lot of people from the different churches that help us, you know, because some of them are from East Preston area, the church out there, East Preston area, and so they're very loving, very compassionate, and helpful to the people.
You say transforming lives and communities. How do you do that?
Well, we talk about transforming lives, and so we're just we're in the business community in Duke Tower, and so we often you try to help people with their situations, whatever it may be, whether it's going through a divorce, marital problems, things of that nature. So, you know, and we have some mental health issues that in the community.
Just reading here on your website, jerryleet.com, Jerry has a passion to tell and warn others not to follow the deception he embraced and to help people avoid the disappointments or regrets of breaking the rules in life.
That's right, Sheldon.
How do you warn them? How do you tell them?
Yes. Well, when we go out at nighttime, you know, as I said, once a month, and so we caution them not to break the rules of life, right? And like I did 25 or 30 years ago, and we caution them not to break the rules of life.
Ultimately, many of the organized religions around the world use the same philosophy, which is do unto others.
Yes.
It sounds as though you had, you know, considerable amount of opportunity that you ended up making some bad choices.
Yeah, absolutely, Sheldon. I made some bad choices in life, and, you know, with my young family at that time, it was, it was an incredible situation.
And you are paying it forward.
Yes, I am, Sheldon.
A few people reacting to our conversation, and thank you for the words. So again, the ministry itself, where do people find you if they don't go to City Hall, if they're not at the legislature while sessions in?
Well, I often get calls from people, and we're in, as I said, we're on the second floor of Duke Tower, and in Scotia Square, and so people often call me, we get connected at that time.
Did you start the City Center Ministry? Was that yours?
No, it was. It started by Reverend Tom Robinson. He was an Anglican priest, and that was started probably about 28 years ago, and so we've always been in the downtown, and it's a bunch of men and women that got together in the business community and developed this, you know, Monday to Friday ministry.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, again, it's a difficult story to tell. Obviously, you're becoming more comfortable telling it, and I do certainly appreciate having a chance to have our audience listen to it today.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much, Sheldon.
Jerry Leet, Shattered by Pride is the book you wrote that is published by, is it Essence Publishing?
Essence, yes. Essence Publishing, yes.
Fabulous. And there's a website as well if you're interested in learning more, jerryleet.com. Jerry, thanks for doing this.
Thank you very much, Sheldon. Really appreciate it.
All right, we'll take a break, and in a few moments we'll be discussing what? Oh, fire services with Jim Roper. We'll be right back after this news update. Into the final hour of the Sheldon McLeod Show here on News 95.7 for this Monday, October 1st. And Matt Brand is our producer. Matt, I sent you an email. Hopefully that solves the mystery of tickets for this event. Big thanks to Laura Whitman, Songs of the City, presented by United Way. Check them out online if you want to learn more. If you didn't listen or didn't have an opportunity to hear our conversation from earlier today, we do podcast. That's a way for you to listen back after the fact. And I call this our live dress rehearsal for our upcoming podcast edition. Right here on the Raid AIO. That's all here on News 95.7. Moshe Lander, let's talk economics. That's in a few moments. And, well, NAFTA. It says it's live. Are they still talking? Freeland continue to work towards steel and aluminum tariff issue, or is that, says it's breaking news. I think they're still up there, still chatting. Are they still chatting, Producer Matt? Looks like it. I think they are.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. All for the greater good. All right. We know that last week there was a conversation about police officers. In fact, counselors earlier today on the Rick Howe Show were saying whether or not something that will be legal on October 18th should be something that can, I know it's the 17th, can be done by people who are, well, in protective services. And it's, I think, a fascinating conversation. And on the line with us this afternoon, he is with the Fire Services Association of Nova Scotia. Jim Roper is his name. Mr. Roper, welcome to the show, sir. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. And yourself?
I'm very well. FSAN's president. You're a member of the Pictou Landing Fire Department.
That's correct, yep.
And how long have you been in the fire service, sir?
Over 30 years.
30 years as a volunteer firefighter, correct?
Correct, yeah.
That's a long career as somebody who's not being paid.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, I saw this again just earlier today. You know, professionalism is an attitude, not necessarily a paycheck. What is the state of Nova Scotia's volunteer fire services from your perspective?
I think it's in a relatively good state. There are issues, recruitment is always an issue, trying to find more people to do the job. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think the service is fairly healthy.
Well, one of the things that I've been a member of the fire services for about almost 15 years, and this idea that, you know what, whether it's your paid career or if it's a volunteer gig, we all are human and we're all perhaps at risk of PTSD or occupational stress injury. Do you find that's becoming a more common conversation within your membership and within the association as a whole?
Very much so. It's a topic that's very high on our list. We're dealing with it, quite regularly. We've got our CISM team that's actively involved in doing debriefings with when incidents occur. But we're also looking at some further studies and further ways to help people that do suffer from some of these mental stress injuries.
Mm. Jim Roper is here. You know, when I hear the chief of the Barney's River Fire Department, Joe McDonald, speaking about what his members have gone through, and it's not fair, really isn't, for members of any fire service to be dealt that hand. But overall, though, do you find that might be perhaps one of the challenges with recruitment is that, you know, people are much more perhaps in touch with what might happen, what they might observe, what they might see?
Oh, very much so. I think it's on every chief's mind that's a concern when we recruit new members, and those members are much more aware with what's happening with the information that's out there on the stress injuries and PTSD and the mental health, the total mental health picture sort of thing. So it's something we have to be leery of, and again, that's why FSANS has taken a role to try and enhance that. We have a very good system now, but we want to look at expanding that so we don't miss anybody, and we nobody kind of falls through the cracks with this when something like this happens.
Hmm. Jim Roper with us has mentioned he's the president of the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia. My understanding from Halifax Regional Fire is that they're still working on a policy for their volunteer contingent. I was told it may be as early as sometime this week that they released that discussion, that something that they've been working towards. Do you know if there's been a conversation on a provincial level for volunteer fire services when it comes to the pending legalization of cannabis?
Nothing that I'm aware of. I know that most departments have taken it upon themselves to, or some have taken it upon themselves to develop a policy, and particularly those with paid services have to look at that very intently. But the volunteer service is kind of left on their own to develop the policies within their own fire stations.
And I'm going to guess that many departments will perhaps take their policy on alcohol and just apply it to cannabis.
I would suspect that'll probably be what takes place, yes.
Is there anything that concerns you about this pending legalization? There had been some, speculation within the fire service that, people start growing pot in their homes, there may be an increased fire risk. Is that something that concerns you in any way?
Oh, I think it does. Anytime there's we add ways to start a fire or the possibility of having more fires, that's always a concern. So those impending grow-ups are a concern, and also with more the possibility of more impairment out there, then we may have more people on the road, so there could be an increase in motor vehicle accidents. Again, we'll have to wait and see what the numbers say and look at the data down the road. Hopefully that's not the case, but I think it's always in the back of everyone's mind.
Yeah, clearly the ways of notifying or sort of analyzing and knowing whether somebody's impaired behind the wheel, those types of things. This is an experiment in a lot of ways, Jim, and we're just going to have to kind of figure it out as we go along.
And that's a good way to put it. That's what it is, an experiment, and we'll learn from our mistakes, unfortunately, sort of thing, in some cases.
Jim, there were a number of reports over the last number of years. I know there was an exhaustive report looking at the volunteer service here in Nova Scotia, and many of the indicators are, the value of the volunteers to the provincial economy is huge. And if, municipalities were forced to pay for what they now receive through the dedication of the volunteers, probably wouldn't be pleased with how much our taxes would rise. What do you see as one of the challenges right now for fire services in the province?
Well, again, I think the recruitment and retention is a big part of it. We see in a lot of cases the numbers of volunteers are dropping off, or the number of volunteers in those stations right now are getting older, and it's it's kind of getting to the point where we need younger people involved, and how we do that is critical. But there are other issues. Financing is a very expensive proposition to operate a fire station, and how do we continue to fund these things, the stations, and upgrade equipment and continually train people? So that's a concern as well, and areas that's being looked at presently.
Yeah, Jim Roper is here with us. And Jim, we're at our department, we're looking at our bylaws that have been written many, many years ago. And I don't know if it was the case with your service, your fire department. It was actually included in our bylaws that we would accept no more than 50 volunteers. And, I don't know how long it's been since we've had to worry about that as a problem. But I suspect, one of the challenges that young people with minimum wage or perhaps working two jobs, is there a commitment? Is it an economic reason that people aren't coming forward?
Probably in some cases it's both. I know it's tough, with trying to maintain a family and a household and trying to work those long hours to do that. And then there's also the commitment involved. I think some people are scared that they're going to be training two or three nights a week, or their weekends are tied up doing training. And in some cases that is the case, but it's not long term. It's once you're trained, you're at a position. There's always ongoing training, but once you reach that first level of training, then that kind of subsides a little bit and it slows down a little bit. I think we have to do a better job of promoting the organization and the fire service sort of thing, and I guess more so promoting the rewards of belonging to the fire service. There are some great rewards of belonging to a fire department and actually accomplishing some of the goals that you do. It's a very satisfying and rewarding career.
I'd love to get back to having a black helmet. Jim Roper's here.
Yes.
Jim, who got you into this? How did you get perhaps involved with what you're doing now as your career?
I guess I have to blame my brother-in-law. He joined the fire department, and I kind of tagged along with him a few years later, and became involved with it, and very much enjoyed it. It's a very, like I say, it's a very rewarding career sort of thing.
There are days.
Oh, exactly. Same as anything.
Absolutely. Jim, it's a real pleasure to meet you on the radio. And Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia, president since when? When did that election happen?
I've been president just over a year. Sat on the executive for the last 6 years, I guess.
All right. Well, we're certainly pleased to have an opportunity to bend your ear today and get your thought on some of these important stories. You're a member of the Pictou Landing Department?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Any thoughts on the pulp mill and the pipe out in the Northumberland Strait?
There's lots of interesting discussions ongoing, and will be for a while yet.
All right, we'll leave
it'll
it.
Be interesting to see where it goes.
We'll leave it at that, and perhaps we'll ask you that when it's not live on the radio.
Yeah.
Jim Roper, thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Nice to meet you.
You too. Bye now.
Jim Roper is the president of the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia's position he's taken on, and this is an association representing numerous fire departments across the province. Okie dokie, Smokey. We're going to take a break, and coming up in just a few minutes, it's all about stadium talk. And, well, we'll give some extra time because I know NAFTA is going to be part of this too. That's Moshe Say. Can we move our talk a little later in the day because I'm being inundated? He's an economics professor at Concordia University. He's also been a professor here in Halifax at Dalhousie. Moshe is back with us. You got something to say, Matt? You look like you wanted to tell me something very important.
No, just coughing, really. I was coughing in my arm.
Oh, okay.
So the opposite, I guess.
All right. I'm glad you're better-ish. You weren't coughing on the air.
Till the next time I cough.
Okay. All right. Hold it in. I'll get you Fisherman's Friend, and we'll be back with Moshe Lander after this. Mentioned on the air last week that I noticed on Facebook, if you share a story or an article, there's a little eye that pops up. If you want to see whether or not, see how far that story has traveled and perhaps a bit more about the platform that it's hosted on. And when I first saw this story, I won't lie, thought it might have been a bit of a joke site. Deadspin is the name of the online publication. And it had a rather provocative headline. Manitoba admits it got conned. Gives up on Winnipeg's CFL stadium ever actually paying for itself. The author, Barry Pachetsky, is the man's name. And, if you go to the Kinja Terms of Use, which is associated with that page, start to roll through. It says, hi, if you're agreeing that each person you allow through this, yada, 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 make sure you post it. It's, don't mind if it's a bit controversial. It doesn't say fake news. Doesn't use that terminology in any way. So Deadspin. You do a little bit broader search on this story. Whoa, Moshe Lander, where are you, sir? How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
So this isn't fake news. This is a true story that the premier of Manitoba says there's no way that we're going to make our money back, so they've written off the loan?
Yeah, it's not fake news at all, and in fact, it's probably one of the least surprising bits of news, isn't it? It's always the case that stadiums don't pay for themselves, and that's why we have private people pay for it rather than public.
Says on Wednesday of last week, Manitoba's government wrote off the second of two loans totaling $200 million that were used to construct Investors Group Field. Investors Group Field? That sounds a little ironic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great that you sell the naming rights for millions of dollars to a company that is proud to put their name on for 10 to 20 years, and then you get the city or the province to stump up the cash, and they're the ones that are on the hook for it when things go sour. Let that be a lesson to Halifax with a CFL franchise coming your way.
Now, this one is a 33,000-seat stadium. I think that's about average for CFL teams in Canada. Opened in 2013. Really, though, it's, as you say, a pretty stark warning or perhaps a loud and clear message that if anything happens in Halifax in regards to a stadium, that somebody else needs to pay for it other than taxpayers.
Absolutely. And the mayor of Halifax has already said that he doesn't want to put public funds towards it, and hopefully he can stick to his guns. Usually what ends up happening, though, is you find some way around it where you end up giving public funds without the public realizing that public funds have been given to them. You give them tax concessions, or you give them part of the incremental tax revenue that's created from the surrounding businesses to come when the stadium comes to town. but call it what you want, it's still tax money that's being given to it. That absolutely needs to be avoided in Halifax. Winnipeg is now the model to hold up.
When this initially was rolled out several years ago, as it says, 2013-2014, I'm sure that people were optimistic, that the backers and the politicians were quite clear that, this is a no-lose situation. But taxpayers have lost, have they not?
Yeah, when you write off $200 million, that's not just it's a write-off and don't worry about it. It's that $200 million has to be paid for by somebody. And it's just that the government has recognized that that's not going to come from surrounding businesses. So the Manitoba taxpayer is going to be handed a nice bill for $200 million. And if you figure that Manitoba has, what, maybe 2 million people, give or take, you basically handed them a $100 bill per man, woman, and child in the province.
Moshe Landers here, economics professor, Dalhousie, and Concordia University. We're talking about the stadium deal. So, Moshe, what language should we be listening for if we finally hear the pitch once those that are in the know, those that are looking to do this here in Halifax? What kind of language should we be listening for? What would the trigger or keywords be for us to perhaps perk our ears up and say, no, let's pass on this one?
Every city that funds a stadium, whether that's Edmonton for hockey or Winnipeg for a stadium, they come up with differing language, but it's all the idea of this sort of like community revitalization fund. So the idea is that they're going to say that, look, while we're not giving tax dollars to it, we're going to maybe help them out by giving them a portion of surrounding property tax revenue that's created from surrounding business. This is kind of a Lansdowne model that Halifax seems to be interested in. If you don't hear that 100% of the money is being paid for out of a check from the owners, then something's not right. There should be a complete full accounting of where that money's coming from, and it has to be the owner's pocket. When you start seeing that there's side deals being made or that concessions are being made, that's when the warning flag should go up.
Moshe Landers here. There will be an ask. You're pretty confident? You're quite confident that somebody is going to ask here for a stadium in Halifax and they're going to ask the government to spend money on it?
Oh, you'd be foolish if you didn't. I mean, you have to at least make the pitch, right? So what you do is you get the CFL commissioner to come in behind Maritime, which is the ownership group that's going to go for the bid here. And you have them kind of leverage and say, we don't have to put a team here. We can wait a few years so we get yourself and your act together, but it would be really good. And you start to apply pressure to key members of city council, if you can't get to the mayor, or key members in the legislature and say that you really do need to help us out here. And then when you start hearing them saying, this is a good idea, that's when you know that the tide is turning against the taxpayer here. So they'd be foolish not to ask, but you should be prepared in advance that it's going to come and be prepared to say no, because it will not be worth it in the end.
Moshe Landers here. Moshe, I know you wanted to, move the time of our chat today because of all the conversation about NAFTA. We heard the Prime Minister. He was pretty clear. I don't know what's going on around you, but it's...
Sorry, I got construction going on behind me.
I can hear that. All right, so...
back from lunch.
No worries. The idea that Justin Trudeau said no NAFTA deal is better than a bad NAFTA deal. Do we know whether this USMCA is a good deal or a bad deal yet?
If it was a better deal than no deal, but it's not a good deal, and better could have been had. As soon as Mexico was splintered off from Canada in terms of trilateral negotiations, that's when you knew that Canada was about to get it. And they did. They could have gotten a lot more. They could have asked for a lot more. But you have a wild man running the show in the U.S., and he wanted to treat it as a bilateral negotiation. And that kind of doomed Canada to its fate. Justin Trudeau was right that, Canada got the best deal that it could, and the best deal that it could was better than no deal at all, but they were held over a barrel here. If anyone deserves a lot of credit this morning, it's Chrystia Freeland for 13, 14 months of having to endure that garbage. She really showed herself to be a very fine representative of Canada in very trying circumstances.
Well, and to carry that to its extension, which would be that we said no, that we didn't agree it was a good deal, had we taken a pass. What do you think might have been perhaps the outcome down the road?
No, I think a pass was worse. I think the fact that there's at least a door open to renegotiate this or revisit it, say in 2 years when Trump's no longer in power, maybe 6 years, and that the agreement itself has some limited form of reevaluation 6 years out, that at least can give Canada a bit of a pass to say that, all right, this wasn't the best deal that he could have gotten. We were never going to get the best deal given the odds that were stacked against us when Mexico signed their own bilateral deal. So let's at least kind of get something on the table here. Let's create some degree of certainty for Canadian business. And then hopefully there's somebody reasonable coming into the White House in 2 to 6 years that's going to allow us to revisit this and do the deal that should have been done in the first place.
Well, Gelander's here with us. I'm just reading from the Canadian press. U.S. President Donald Trump taking a victory lap at the White House, cheering Sunday's last-minute free trade deal and pronouncing the death of the 25-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement. Is that a fair assessment as to how the U.S. president is looking at this negotiation, that it's a win, that it's a victory?
Yeah, totally. And so, unfortunately, trade deals should be win-win-win. So everybody should have been able to walk away here a winner. Donald Trump has never seen trade in terms of win-win. It's always win and lose. It's a zero-sum game to him. So from the outset, the fact that that's the way that he viewed NAFTA, it did need updating, it did need modernizing, it did need revisions. But when you're negotiating with someone who's going to say that this is my win comes at your expense, Canada had to stick side by side with Mexico and say we're in this together, because otherwise he's gonna take advantage of us. He did. He does deserve his victory lap. He got everything that he wanted to shore up his base 4 weeks before an election. That does not mean that we should be happy this morning.
Just looking at North American Free Trade Deal, this one, USMCA, it's the USA with Mexico and Canada, just kind of as a side note to that whole, it's no question that, yeah, United States is front and center, and wouldn't be a surprise that Donald Trump has taken this as a win.
Even when he wanted to rebrand this, which is what he said ultimately he wanted to do, I think even there he blew it. USMC is the United States Marine Corps. I've at least been saying that if you want to rebrand this, call it the Mexico-U.S.-Canada agreement, and then we can say that at least North America is making music together. I even think that they blew that one, too.
There you go. Well, Moshe, thanks for your take on stadiums and your added bonus today that we got to talk about NAFTA.
No worries. Anytime.
You take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Moshe
Lander is an economics professor. He does specialize in studying about the deal of the stadium, and as he says, yeah, there's no question that a public stadium or a stadium that's financed through public means is expensive, and it's going to be expensive. And he says, you know, the words sometimes that they use when they're pitching these may vary, but the end game is the same. Unless they've got a check for the entire amount to build it themselves, you and I are on the hook. Producer Matt, are you happy with that?
Yeah, I'm just imagining, like, writing a check for that much money. Here's a check for X millions of dollars. Well, you can write one, I suppose.
Yeah. Like brought that. To you by Goodyear. Boing.
Might bounce. Oh, I see.
Yeah, it's bounced. No, people don't talk like
I
that.
Thought, I thought Goodyear already had the name rights or something.
No, that's an old thing. It's like a Michelin check. It just bounces. But that's not because Michelin's a successful company. Stars. All that stuff. Yeah. All righty. We're talking about how risky of an investor are you? Risky inventor?
All my inventions involve sharp, pointy things. So pretty risky.
World domination.
Yeah.
First we take Manhattan, then we take the world. All right, risk tolerance and our risk profile. That's what Ken Shea's here to talk about. We'll get to your money because it matters. It's Monday. It's next. We'll be back.